The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Is the Peter Boyle Show.
Indeed we are. Good morning, everyone. 8 a.m. on a Monday morning, the 23rd of November, 710 KNUS. Thanksgiving week, the imaginary Thanksgiving Day Parade is Wednesday. And yesterday, believe it or not, marks 57 years that Jack Kennedy was murdered. 61 to high, 39 tomorrow. Snow comes in. He's become part of our show. I think I've read almost everything he's done now. He's a great historian. His name is Lou Paper. And he did a book on John Kennedy. And one time we're sitting talking about something else, and then he said, well, you know, I've written all about the assassination. And then that book came. Hey, Lou, thanks for doing the show, man. Welcome back and good morning again.
Well, my pleasure. It's always great to be with you.
You know, it's interesting because radio, talk radio, and the media is now totally run by conspiracy now on the election of Donald Trump and what happened. But I was a kid then when this happened. I was working in a steel mill in Pittsburgh. And this really was the, I mean, I know there's been conspiracies, lots of conspiracies before, but this is the one I think that sets it off. And I have this theory, historical theory, that between that second that John Kennedy dies and the moment Richard Nixon resigns, sets aside enormous amounts of conspiracies through Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, and then on and on and on it goes. What do you do with that overview of the murder of Jack Kennedy?
Well, for me, as indicated, we're talking about, so your listeners know, I did a book about John Kennedy's presidency. That was my first book. And that book gave me some insight into what might have happened on November 22nd. I was very skeptical after doing a lot of reading and knowing what I know about whether Oswald was involved at all and certainly whether he did it alone. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence which indicates that he did not. And so what I did is years after I wrote my first book on John Kennedy's presidency, as you're speaking now, I did a novel which revolves around Kennedy's assassination. And it might be, for your listeners, it's called Deadly Risks. And it might be likened to John Grisham's book, The Pelican Brief. So unlike John Grisham's book, The Pelican Brief, which revolved around the assassination of two Supreme Court justices, this book, as I said, revolves around Kennedy's assassination. And it opens up with a young woman who receives a letter that her father had written, and it was given to her after his untimely death. And he says that he was a CIA case officer and he was involved in Kennedy's assassination. And then she spends a considerable time trying to figure out what he did. And as the protagonist in John Grisham's The Pelican Brief, she encounters a lot of people who are trying to prevent her and even kill her from disclosing the truth. So, but to your point, so, and the book goes through and provides some detail about my doubts that Oswald did it alone. But I'm focused. I have a legal training, so I'm very focused on specific circumstances, specific events. I don't know that the Kennedy assassination really relates to any other conspiracies involving other actors. I think it revolves around very specific circumstances. There were people, certainly in the mafia, who did not like John Kennedy and Bob Kennedy and would have been happy, and I think were happy when he was killed. And also, as my book relates, I think there are many people in government who were very upset with John Kennedy and might have seen in John Kennedy a danger to our nation's security. So, again, to your point, this novel is, like I say, it's a thriller. It's not just a fictional account of John Kennedy's assassination. And so it really focuses on the specific circumstances of his death, his life and his death.
Our guest is, and I read, I think, probably everything now. I read the novel as well. His name is Lou Paper. We met him. He did a book on Don Larson's Perfect Game. He's done just incredible books and talked about this ambassador to Japan in the Second World War, and I thought that was a wonderful book. But we come to this, and, you know, I do think, and this is personal belief, that I do believe that the murder of Kennedy echoes through organized crime, through American foreign policy, vis-a-vis Cuba or Southeast Asia. Jack Kennedy, I think Richard Nixon is the most complex president this country's had, but I think Jack Kennedy is the most intriguing one, far more than ones we've seen since.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Yeah, when Jack Kennedy's murdered, the world changes. Do you believe that Jack Kennedy would have continued U.S. foreign policy in Vietnam?
No,
I don't know.
I think, in fact, that's one of the circumstances that goes in my book.
I talk about
the fact that there were people in the United States government who were very unhappy with Kennedy's performance. And I look at it from the perspective of individuals. Too often when we think about these big policies, we think of government as kind of this monolithic machine that moves forward. But in fact, what we're talking about are a lot of individual people, like you and me and like your listeners, who have thoughts about this and who might have been upset about what Kennedy was doing. But to answer your question, I think there's a lot of evidence to indicate, and I do believe, that Kennedy would not have followed the policies that Lyndon Johnson did in staying in Vietnam.
I agree.
I don't think he would have done that. But I don't think he wanted to get out before the election in 1964 because I think he was afraid that if he did, that it would provide fodder for his political opponents that he was soft on communism.
And eventually, of course, it's Barry Goldwater that Lyndon Johnson runs against. His involvement with organized crime. Was John Kennedy involved with organized crime?
I don't think so. But I don't think John Kennedy was involved in organized crime in any way. But there's no question that his father, who was very intent upon him becoming president, I think John Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, I think he did rely on the resources of the mafia, especially in Chicago.
And West Virginia.
To help get his son elected. And I think they did, I think, help get Kennedy elected. And I think they were hopeful that with John Kennedy's election, they would have, I won't say a friend, but somebody who was sympathetic would treat them well.
Remember,
and in fact, they were very disappointed because not only did they not treat them well, but Bobby Kennedy became the Attorney General, and Bobby Kennedy went after them as no other Attorney General had before. And I think they felt that they had been betrayed because they felt that they had helped them get elected president. And then the thanks they got were lawsuits and investigations.
Jimmy Hoffa and Reverend Marcello. Our guest is Lou Paper.
Right.
It was 57 years ago. Unbelievable. And
it really is.
When the Giancanas wrote a book called Double Cross. Sam's nephew.
Yeah, I did. I saw that.
You read the book? And it was, I met them. And what they said was, and I think it's true, that Jack Kennedy double-crossed them. They helped them in West Virginia. And even in that press conference, Giuliani mentioned Chicago, or mentioned Illinois and Mayor Daley and how they stole the election.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt they stole the election from Nixon. They stole that election. And at that point, the organized criminals in this country who did business with his father knew that. And by the way, wasn't he sleeping with the same woman that was sleeping with Sam Giancana?
Yeah, Judith Exner was a woman who I think was Frank Sinatra was the go-between.
You bet.
They had set him up.
And so as the... Go, I'm sorry.
I totally. That's certainly what they feel, that the mafia felt that they had helped Kennedy get elected. I don't, whether they stole the election, I don't know. I guess you could argue about that, but there's no question that the mafia did help them get elected.
Oh, sure.
And I think that they felt that they had been betrayed when Bobby Kennedy initiated those investigations into them. Carlos Marcello, for you mentioned him, he was the head of the crime family in New Orleans, and he was picked up on a street after when Bobby Kennedy was attorney general.
Deported.
He was literally picked up on a street and pushed onto a plane and deported to Guatemala, Guatemala before he knew what had happened. And needless to say, he was not happy about that.
But it was also all those guys. I mean, it was Carlos Marcello, it was Santos Traficante, it was Tony Arcardo, it was, you know, certainly Sam Giancana. Giancana threw Sinatra. I mean, and that story that Joe Kennedy, and it's all, they've proven it, Joe Kennedy brings Frank Sinatra to Hyannisport and says, we need their help. And he carries that message. And I mean, the whole thing is a rig. I mean, but the problem is, and I come back to what we've been talking about off the air, how do you absolutely prove it? Lou, what do you do with that?
Well, it'll be very difficult to prove it. This is one of the enduring mysteries, and that's one of the great things about a lot of what the mafia does. They're very good at keeping these secrets, which, of course, is the premise of my book. When this woman, you know, many years after the fact, tries to uncover what happened and how, and this takes place in today, you know, because it takes many years after the assassination, because these people were very good at keeping this thing a secret. Just like in Jimmy Hoffa's death, we don't know exactly what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. And so, but like I say, there's certainly lots of evidence to indicate that, you know, that they were involved. And so one of the more intriguing things that I saw, and this is, you know, I relate this in my book, is that Jack Ruby, who was, initially a soldier in Sam Giancana's outfit from Chicago, and he was in Dallas, and he was a bit player, but he was the one, as everybody knows, who killed Oswald shortly after Oswald was arrested. And later, when they questioned, when Ruby was taken to jail, his first visitor was Joseph Campisi, who was a member of one of the capos in Carlos Marcello's outfit from New Orleans. And that was certainly, because a lot of times when somebody does something, the mafia, they have this omerta, the silence. And I'm sure they made clear to him that he should keep quiet about the truth, and that if he didn't, that there would be consequences. And so Jack Ruby, when he was asked about why he killed Oswald, said that he was very upset because he didn't want Jackie Kennedy to have to go to a public trial.
Jackie and the kids,
which is laughable on its face. But the other important thing about Jack Ruby was that when the Warren Commission conducted its investigation, they came down to Dallas and interviewed Jack Ruby in jail, and he kept telling them, bearing in mind what I just said about Joseph Campisi having visited Ruby in jail in Dallas. And Jack Ruby said to Warren's the Warren Commission investigators, he said, I can't talk to you here. But he said, if you will take me to Washington, I can tell you what lies behind all of this and what's going on.
And they wouldn't do it.
And they because he was afraid for his safety, obviously, if he stayed in Dallas.
That's right.
And he wanted to be in Washington where he thought he might be have better protection. But the Warren Commission investigators refused to believe him, and they refused to transport him to Washington to be interrogated. So he never went to Washington, and he never said anything other than he did it to protect Jackie Kennedy from having to go to a public trial.
He died in jail of cancer.
Right. That's correct. Not too long thereafter.
Ruby, and there are people that believe that he was made sick. Our guest is Lou Paper. This is the 57th anniversary.
By the way, for your listeners, if they can go to my website, which is Lou Paper, LEWPAPER, LouPaper.com, Then you go to my website, you can not only see a description of the book, but there is also a video trailer about the book if they're interested.
And then Lee Harvey Oswald. And when Alfred Hitchcock made movies, he had always had a thing called a MacGuffin. And Oswald, I mean, weird. He's unwanted. His home life's unstable. His father abandons him. His mother surrenders him to an orphanage. He is a truant. He's a juvenile delinquent. Fled his home state of Louisiana. Gets in the Marine Corps. He's active. He's drops out of high school, joins the Marines, accepts. I guess even though he scored the lowest in each military aptitude test, they said he qualified as a sharpshooter and that he could routinely hit things the size of a dinner plate from distances over 200 yards. A loner. He didn't get along with other Marines. He's court-martialed, I think, 2 times. He gets an undesirable discharge from the Corps. And a couple of days later, he's off to Helsinki, and then he gets a visa, and then he goes into the Soviet Union. And he's in the Soviet Union, tries to defect. The Soviets throw him out. He attempts suicide, recovers. He's making radios. And he gets back in the United States like that, that quick. I never bought that story. What about that, Lou?
Well, Oswald certainly was a misfit for all the reasons you just described. And so the interesting thing about Oswald, it's just hard to believe that, first of all, he could have done it. There's another one of the intriguing things. So Oswald, months before, in the spring of 1963, he has this rifle. And you talk about him being a sharpshooter. So he had this rifle, which had a misaligned telescope.
Oh, it did.
And he tries to assassinate a guy, a former general called Edward Walker, who was a right-wing agitator, so to speak, and had left the army. And Edwin Walker was sitting in his house, I think in his living room. So he was sitting. He wasn't moving. He was sitting. He was just so it might have been, should have been an easy target. And even though he was just sitting in his house in an open window, Oswald fired and missed.
Mm-hmm.
So right there you say, well, if this guy couldn't hit a sitting target with the lights on at night, yet this is a guy who fired, according to the Warren Commission, fired 3 bullets at a moving target that was much further away, and 2 of the bullets found their mark. So right there you have to be suspicious. So here's Oswald, who's trying to kill a right-wing general agitator who is very critical of John Kennedy, and then he turns around and kills John Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to connect the dots there. Right. And then the other interesting thing is that in those days, this was before there was the Supreme Court required that all accused felons be given their Miranda rights and be given the right to an attorney. So Oswald's arrested. He has no attorney. He is interrogated by the police day and night. He's beaten up and while he's interrogation there. They physically abuse him while he's there. He comes down in this state of when he hasn't had any sleep, has been beaten up, and he's paraded before the press, press, which was at the Daly Dallas jail, at all hours of the day and night. And he's asked about whether he killed Kennedy. And he insists that he did not kill Kennedy. He doesn't try and brag about it. He says, I'm just a patsy for somebody else, for the people who really did kill Kennedy. And so, you know, that's pretty remarkable that in that kind of circumstance, that was his reaction in those circumstances.
I have some friends. Our guest is Lou Paper. This was way before any gun laws were in this country. Many gun laws come in because he did mail order the Carcano. But these guys are real bright, and I really enjoy their work. And they said Oswald could have anywhere in Dallas or wherever he was in Texas, could have walked into any sporting goods store and bought a really sophisticated, very accurate Winchester, Remington, you fill in the blank, Weatherby, over-the-counter, not a problem. Instead, he mail orders. I forget how much the gun was, like under $15.
I think it was about $22 or something like that.
And it was this Carcano that couldn't shoot straight. Why didn't he, as these questioners say, he could have walked in any gun store, Lou, and bought I mean, a really fine firearm. Instead, he does a mail order.
Well, this goes back to what I'm saying is that, I don't want to get into my book. My book talks about this. But again, my book talks about this in the context of, as I say, some woman trying to uncover years after the fact what her father did. But, you know, I think that ultimately Oswald was a foil for the people who did this. And so if you look at it from that perspective, then everything you just described makes a lot more sense.
Let's do this. I need a pause. Go back and let's begin with Cuba. And there's these theories, and I love this stuff, that everything in that time period runs through Cuba, whether it's organized crime, losing casinos, whether it's Jack Kennedy, the Castro brothers, Che Guevara. I mean, millions, and the CIA especially, and the Mongoose Project people, and all of those guys, there was a cabal going on at that time period that American people had no idea. Our guest is Lou Paper. 75 years ago, wow, the pandemic has lots of homeowners and renters reevaluating what kind of living space they need. Maybe it's extra room for use as an office or maybe some space for remote learning. Sounds ideal, but is it affordable? It's showtime. Mortgage rates are still at record lows, but this could change. We're getting a changing of the guard. And when that happens, who knows what the prime's going to do. But if you lock it in today, and this is at a low rate. I mean, I refied with them this year. Call American Financing today, 303-695-7000. Lock the rate in now, 303-695-7000, 303-695-7000. I'll pick up the phone, begin a process, but the rate gets locked in when you talk to them today. Apply online, AmericanFinancing.net, AmericanFinancing.net, but the phone, either way, NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
Now, back to the Peter Boyle Show.
Stefan this afternoon, back here tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Bill Rogan comes back tomorrow. And then the imaginary Thanksgiving Day parade this year with celebrity floats. 61 will be the high, 29 tonight. We got some snow tomorrow. And this is, of course, Thanksgiving week and giving thanks. Dr. McCallum, top of the gratitude list. She changed my life. You're ready to focus on making the most of your life. This is a holiday gift to give to the mister, to the missus, to your dad, to your mom, somebody you care about. You call Dr. McCallum. Jackie answers the phone, number 720-387-3681, 720-387-3681, and arrange for a free 20-minute phone call with Dr. McCallum. 20 minutes for free at Cenogenics. Call today and begin your journey back to health and the team at Denver Cenogenics. Dr. McCallum changed my life, my daughter's life. She and her partners do the same for you. Cenogenics today, the number 720-387-3681, 720-387-3681, for real. I mean, nothing else. Take the free 20-minute phone call. The website, you can look, denver.cenogenics.com, denver.cenogenics.com. Get your life back. She changed mine. Getting older can be a challenge, but take care of your body and take care of your head and move those older years feeling at the top of your game. 720-387-3681. Historian Lou Paper is with us. It was, believe it or not, it was 57 years ago, yesterday, that John Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. And I don't know why, that's one of these things that just draws me to it forever. And it runs through Cuba. And Bobby Kennedy aside, which I think is the big kicker, but when Jack Kennedy makes the deal that they'll leave Castro alone after the missile crisis, and part of this that American people don't know, or don't always know, that Jack Kennedy agreed to take Jupiter C missiles out of Turkey in exchange for Soviet missiles out of Cuba. And he also agreed that he would leave Castro alone, which didn't happen either, but he agreed to it. What does that set the stage for with organized crime and the CIA? Lou, yours.
Well, Cuba, no question, is a vital part of this story. But I think you have to go back a little further. So in 1959, Fidel Castro kicked out Batista, who was the dictator who ran not only ran Cuba, but was a friend of organized crime. So the mafia and organized crime had big stakes in Cuba. They had a lot of casinos in Havana, and it was a big money-making operation. Well, when Fidel Castro came in, Castro kicked out the mafia, took possession of everything, and the mafia, in fact, he arrested a lot of them. Santa Traficante had trouble getting out of Cuba. But in any event, but more than that, Fidel Castro put his arms around Nikita Khrushchev and the Russians. And so there was a big fear in the United States in 1960, as John Kennedy was getting elected, about having a communist country 90 miles off the coast of Florida. And so, as you, I'm sure you, many of your listeners know, during the Eisenhower administration, an effort was made to train Cuban exiles in Guatemala, and they were going to have invade Cuba, and the thought was that they would spark an uprising and Castro would be toppled as the president of Cuba. And then comes John Kennedy, and he takes over this mission. And at the last minute, so they plan to invade Cuba, these Cuban exiles, in at the Bay of Pigs in April of 1961, only 3 months after he's been elected. And critical to the invaders' success is American air support. And at the last minute, Kennedy cancels the American air support. And, of course, that doomed this invasion. And all the men were either killed or captured who invaded Cuba. And there was no popular uprising. And, of course, it was a big failure, as referred to as the Bay of Pigs fiasco. But from my perspective in doing this book, I look at it from the perspective of the individual CIA. Remember, as I mentioned before, you know, government is not a monolithic entity. It's made up of individuals. And we have some CIA operatives who were down in the jungles of Guatemala training these Cuban exiles in the belief that they were going to take out communism from this country 90 miles off our coast. So you can imagine the disappointment of a lot of these CIA operatives who were sacrificing their comfort and doing what they thought was necessary to get rid of Castro and communism. And suddenly the American president, this new American president, cancels the air support that was critical to the success of this invasion. So, and the story about Cuba gets further. So, sure, we have the Cuban Missile Crisis. You allude to it in your comments, where we found that offensive missiles were being installed in Cuba, and the Russians lied about it to Kennedy. And then they had this the Cuban Missile Crisis when the United States put in a quarantine to prevent the Soviet ships from reaching Cuba with further materials to make those offensive missiles operative. And they enter into this agreement where Russia withdraws the missiles from Cuba and the United States agrees to withdraw its missiles from Turkey, which is near the border of the Soviet Union. So again, a lot of people later considered that one of Kennedy's great successes in staring down Khrushchev and avoiding an armed conflict. But again, if you take this CIA operative who was in the jungles of Guatemala the year before training the Cuban exiles, a lot of people were disappointed with Kennedy's performance in the Cuban Missile Crisis because they felt Kennedy let the Russians get away with lying. The Russians had repeatedly lied about the nature of those missiles in Cuba. And a lot of people, hardliners, were very disappointed with Kennedy's response to the installation of those offensive missiles in Cuba. So Cuba is a very important part of the story here, and I think there are a lot of people, as I say, in the government as well as outside the government, who were disappointed by Kennedy's performance in both of those spheres.
Our guest is Lou Paper. We're discussing one of the great events in terms of changing American foreign policy, domestic policy, the murder of John Kennedy. There's the belief of the cabal of rogue CIA agents, and we know they were doing business with organized crime. We know that's all true. They were meeting. They met outside of Las Vegas. They met in Chicago. They met in Miami. They began something called Operation Mongoose. And Mongoose, they were black ops, and they recruited people that weren't even, you know, and later some of those same people, they were sort of like the black and tans. They just get recruited. And they continue an attempt to kill John Kennedy, to kill Fidel Castro. And then when Castro does what he does to organized crime, Bobby goes after organized crime. The CIA is blunted. It's a setup. I mean, it's a petri dish of people that want Jack Kennedy gone. Why do you believe, Lou, why do you believe ultimately Jack Kennedy was murdered?
I think he was murdered, I think, as I said, for two reasons. One is, I think, as we just discussed, there were a lot of people in the mafia who hated Kennedy, and not just the mafia, but Jimmy Hoffa was out there, too. Jimmy Hoffa, who had close ties to the mafia. Jimmy Hoffa, too, was very upset because he was they had a Get Hoffa squad in the Bobby Kennedy's Justice Department. And so I think there's no doubt that Hoffa put pressure on his friends in the mafia to relieve him of this pressure that he felt from Bobby Kennedy. And then, as I say, my suspicion is, I don't know, I can't prove this, but, you know, again, it's one of the things that is tied up in this thriller I wrote, is I suspect that there were people in the CIA and maybe elsewhere in the government who were very upset and for a variety of reasons viewed Kennedy as a threat to national security, who felt that he was not as tough on communism and the Soviet Union as he should have been. Not only did, as they say, we had the Bay of Pigs fiasco where he canceled the American support for the invasion of Cuba, the Cuban Missile Crisis, where in some people's eyes he was not forceful enough in responding to the Russian lies about the offensive missiles being installed in Cuba. And then in 1963, he entered into a test ban treaty with the Soviet Union. And a lot of people thought that was good because they thought it would be a halt the arms race and protect us from a nuclear holocaust. But other people felt that it gave the Russians an advantage because we were had a superior nuclear force, and it made that superior nuclear force less important in defending America. And then, of course, at the very end, in the fall of 1963, Kennedy authorized the sale of wheat to Russia when their crop failed and there was starvation looming, and he helped Russia out by allowing the sale of wheat to Russia. So, going back to your question, I think that there are a lot of people, both in government and out of government, who saw Kennedy as being soft on communism and from the mafia's perspective and Jimmy Hoffa's perspective, being too hard on them. And so
they're both.
There were a lot of people who felt he was a problem.
Now, I know, I've read a lot of stuff about the Warren Report and I've read the Warren Report. And the Warren Report had a conclusion before it began. And we know from pressure from Edgar Hoover, from Alan Dulles, from numbers of people, including Lyndon Johnson, Fulbright, and others, they had a conclusion before they began. The conclusion was Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. They actually admitted later that they couldn't have taken it any wider because it would have caused problems in America, panic, whatever the reasons were. I don't buy that, but I do believe that they had their conclusion before they began. Explain Oswald.
Well, by the way, for your listeners who may have just tuned in, again, this book that I wrote on the Kennedy assassination is called Deadly Risks, and it's a thriller that can be likened to John Grisham's book, The Pelican Brief. But instead of revolving around the assassination of two Supreme Court justices, it revolves around the Kennedy assassination. But it's a woman who tries to unravel the clues in her father's letter, where he says he was involved in the Kennedy assassination. And again, they can go to my website, Lou Paper, L-E-W-P-A-P-E-R, loupaper.com, and read about the book and also see a video. But going about the book, but going back to your question, when Kennedy was assassinated, a lot of people were concerned about what was going on here, whether the Russians, not the mafia, but they were concerned that the Russians may have been involved. And so there was a lot of uncertainty and concern around the country, and Lyndon Johnson was very anxious to assuage this public anxiety. And so he brought on Chief Justice Earl Warren and made it clear to him that he had to come investigate this and come up with a report as soon as possible to ease public anxiety. And he was hoping that they would conclude that Oswald was the assassin and that he acted alone, and that if he came out with a report, if the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court came out with a report saying that Oswald did it and Oswald did it alone and the Russians were not involved, that that would, as I say, ease the public anxiety over what was going on here. And so that's what they did. They rushed through that report, and they ignored a lot of evidence and came out with this report. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the things, for example, Jack Ruby, the investigators from the Mooring Commission went down to Dallas and interviewed Jack Ruby in jail, and he was afraid to talk because he was afraid of the consequences as a mafia soldier, what would happen to him if he talked. And so he urged the Warren Commission investigators to take him back to Washington where he could speak freely, but they refused to do that because, in part, I don't want to cast aspersions against these people, but they didn't, and I think that was an unfortunate mistake.
Lou, how many people do you think actually, we were talking about conspiracies, and when people talk about thousands of people being involved, but a conspiracy has to be very tight. I used Dr. Franklin many times. Three can keep a secret if two of them are dead.
Right.
And it's a great line, and it's true. And every once in a while, not so much anymore, but somebody pops up and says, I knew. The lawyer, Romano, I've talked to him. He said he knew. In the book, The Hoffa Wars, they talk about Jimmy talking about shooting Jack off the top of a building. How many people do you think really knew when it was going down?
I think the number of people who actually knew what happened was probably very limited. And apropos of that, it's useful to remember that I'll bring up two cases. So one of the people who is alleged to or believed to have been involved was Sam Giancana,
sure,
because he was the head of the Mafia Chicago outfit, the crime family in Chicago. He was the one who helped Jack Kennedy get elected in 1960, and he was one who was very bitter that that the mafia was subject to attacks and investigations and wiretaps and all that from Bobby Kennedy's Justice Department. And the other person who was alleged to be involved, he was a guy named Johnny Rosselli, who was the CIA's contact with the CIA when they were trying to come up with plots to assassinate Fidel Castro, and who presumably would have known what was going on with any move the mafia made about John Kennedy. So in 1975,
both get
murdered. 1975, Frank Church, at the Senate, Senator Frank Church from Idaho, was the head of a committee that was investigating the CIA's relationship, was investigating the mafia's relationship with the CIA and their various assassination plots that they were involved in. And so in June of 1975, Sam Giancana was subpoenaed and asked to come testify before the Church Committee about what he knew about the CIA relationship with the mafia. And so about a week or so before he was scheduled to appear before the Church Committee, he was in his home cooking by himself.
Cooking peppers
cooking
and sausage.
Cooking up some sausage and onions.
Yeah.
And he was murdered, and he was shot in the mouth.
Yeah.
And that was a mark about you don't want anybody talking. So he was, and this is a guy who was the former head of the outfit, and so he was killed. And then another guy who was subpoenaed to testify before the Church Committee was Johnny Rosselli, who also knew about the mafia's relationship with the CIA, and he too was subpoenaed, and he too was prepared to go testify, and he never showed up. Nope. And about a month later, the dismembered parts of Johnny Rosselli's body were found in a drum.
Yep.
Floating off the coast, in the Atlantic, right near off the coast of Miami.
Yeah. So I know. I mean,
going back to your question, I think that the number of people who knew was probably limited, who knew actually what happened, and so it was limited. And that's one of the great things the mafia was very good at, was keeping a lid on things. So you never really knew what happened.
I agree with you.
And they would, they were very good at that.
You bet. I agree with you. And, you know, they had to, John Roselli, and there's a book called Handsome Johnny. It's a great book, and
right.
there's so many things about the Giancanas, but Sam got subpoenaed, and he had been living in Mexico, and he comes home, and he's cooking peppers, and whoever killed him.
I think he was cooking sausage and peppers.
Sausage and peppers.
And the only reason I mentioned that is because I love sausage.
Because you're right. No, you're right.
It registered with me that he's cooking sausage. So that sounded very good.
But his critics say, and I got to break and come back, give you the last comment, whoever did it, and they shot him around the mouth, which is don't talk, but he had to know the person that killed him because he let him in the house. And
right.
that's
well, that's usually what happens.
You bet.
Usually what shows up, you know, usually the way it's done is, you know, somebody says to somebody else, this is a problem, you have to take care of it. And like you say, I think the reason mm-hmm. that person who assassinated Sam Giancana was able to do it is it was probably somebody
he knew.
He knew well and trusted.
And that's how they got Johnny, took Johnny out on a boat. Hang on, man, you're great.
Exactly.
Hang on. Let me whack. We'll do to whack Johnny. Groundbreaking. Well, why don't we just take the break? Take the break. We'll come right back.
The Peter Boyle Show.
It's 8:50, 10 before the hour. Stephan at 3. Back here tomorrow morning at 5. Bill Rogan comes back tomorrow. Thanksgiving Day Parade is Wednesday. And groundbreaking advancing FUE treatment from Advanced Hair, the restoration guys, finally here in Denver. And you have a receding hairline. You got a bald spot or spots. You got thinning hair. There's an answer now. These physicians, we met with the surgeon, Tanya Pauls. Travis and I went. And Tanya, and she's like the best. And then there's Farah, and then there's the people. It's all run by women, which I think is very cool. Experienced team and state-of-the-art technology. Surgeon is, and they have to do these transplants and replants. And the advanced FUE treatment, really, it takes a day. It is pain-free, and your new hair starts growing the very next day. 100% guaranteed. All I ask you to do, make the call or take a look at the website. And celebrating Advanced Hair's grand opening in Denver, get special deals right now, special financing, $250 off, and 250 free hair grafts. Call 720-459-HAIR. A wonderful gift to give to the mister, to your boyfriend, to your dad, to someone you care about, maybe your son. Set it up for him to go and see. 720-459-HAIR, women as well. One-day treatment, hair-changing results. You want to really, really do something. Really, it's very, you know, confidential, very private. 720-459-HAIR. The website is advancedhair.com. This guy's terrific. He's a historian by the name of Lou Paper. It was unbelievable. 57 years ago yesterday, the murder of Jack Kennedy. You know, it's just there's echoes of this, and it never goes away. And, we got 2 or 3 minutes. What would you like to say about all of it?
Well, again, just for your listeners, we're talking about, I did a book about John Kennedy's presidency, but then I wrote a novel, a thriller, which revolves around John Kennedy's assassination, which is like John Grisham's book, The Pelican Brief, except instead of talking about the assassination of two Supreme Court justices, it revolves around Kennedy's assassination. And people want to read about the book. Talks about a woman trying to unravel the clues of her father's involvement in the Kennedy assassination. The book is called Deadly Risks, and they can go to my website, Lou Paper, L-E-W-P-A-P-E-R, loupaper.com, and they can read about the book and see a video about the book. But I think the one thing that I would say is this remains probably the enduring mystery of the 20th century, because I have some theories which come out in this book about how and why Kennedy would have been assassinated, but we don't really know the full truth. And for me, as you will see if you read the book, I'm skeptical that Oswald did it alone. In fact, I don't even know if Oswald was involved at all, except maybe as a foil for the people who did do it. And so it's one of those things that I think I doubt that we'll ever really know for sure what happened to Kennedy any more than I think we'll know for sure what really happened to Jimmy Hoffa.
Great. Great way to end it. Lou, the best to you for a wonderful year of talk radio. I know we'll have you back. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. You make the show work, man. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
Okay, Peter. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, man. All right. Tomorrow we'll do it again. 5 a.m. jump off. Bill Rogan and Tim Furnish is on tomorrow about Georgia. And Stephan is this afternoon. And hold on your hats. It just gets better. Billy's off, and thanks, Kelly Michaels. And remember, Thanksgiving Day Parade is Wednesday. Stay here, 710 KNUS. Thank you.
Tell me.